brain, you're in the nerd's domain. Come on in, it's about to begin.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Nerds Domain Podcast. I'm Matt, and today I'm joined by Ed Douglas and Scott Penner from Flying Helmet Games way out in Vancouver, Canada. Say hi, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
And we're going to talk about Aeon Alter, their new Kickstarter. So it's a tabletop game, a tabletop video game, is that correct?
Yeah, Aeon Alter is it's a tabletop video game. We grew up playing tabletop games, board games, pen and paper, and as we got into the video game business, we got further and further away from just playing games face-to-face like we used to. So after 8-9 years doing big AAA business, and we looked at doing a studio of our own, that's where we went. We just decided to, invent the genre of tabletop video gaming, since we had access to tablets and smartphones that we could use to make an actual video game, high-tech video game with modern technology face-to-face.
Okay. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, didn't say anything.
Oh, okay. That might have been my echo. That happens. Let's get into a couple of questions. These are both of you can answer. Number one, in the pending zombie apocalypse, what is your weapon of choice?
I think I'm going to have to go with just a regular bow. I've done a little bit of archery, and I'd like to I think, you know, having something nice and silent is probably the best choice. Crossbow would be good, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Crossbow. Yeah, I think
all right.
That's my answer, crossbow.
Okay. And Ed?
I think I might be standing behind Scott as my choice. I haven't done nearly enough preparation for this, so...
You did hear the pending, right? Pending zombie apocalypse. You got to start playing.
I think I can see them out. I'm on the 17th floor, so I think I can see them out my window already. Looking around.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to take a bat and a frying pan if I had to go in a hurry.
Okay.
I'm not prepared. Shit. This is not turning out into a good podcast already.
Oh no, this is the best kind. Now we know who to leave behind. See, we're set. So, second question, given all of the sci-fi that you know, what planet do you most want to visit?
What's the one from Star Trek, Beta Zed? Is that where that fun video game comes from?
Riza is I'm a huge Star Trek geek. I've been watching nothing but Deep Space Nine lately. So Riza's a good one. I think Coruscant from Star Wars would be amazing. It's just a planet that's just full of a city, like endless opportunities, nothing you couldn't do there.
Okay.
That's pretty cool.
Right on.
Yeah.
All right. We'll go ahead and get into your project a little bit. So you've given us a little bit of your sales pitch, but tell us a little bit more about what you're doing with Aeon Alter, and why do you have such a passion for this?
So Aeon Alter is a video game that you play face-to-face. We want to make a game where we can play around a table, we can hang out with friends, order some pizza, get some drinks, get some beer, and just play a video game where we're not isolated by, like, you know, social game that you're playing with people miles away, or playing a console game with your friends where you're split screen. There's so many games out there that are amazing board games, tabletop games, pen and paper games, where you can play face-to-face, where you can do this. But when you get into the video games, where you can build amazing graphics and worlds and story and mood and atmosphere, the more you do that, the more you detach yourself from actually interacting with other people, interacting with your friends. And we've realized over the last couple of years with this new technology, the proliferation of tablets, smartphone handsets, which are like my iPhone right now has more power than my computer did like 6 years ago. It's amazing. I think it has more power than my old Xbox.
Oh yeah,
and we can actually play a real video game with my friends just with the phone I pull out of my pocket. And when we realized that the idea of a video game doesn't have to be a monitor in front of your face, it can be something that you can put down. It can be a shared space to play. it kind of clicked with us that this is something we really, really want to try. We hadn't seen it anywhere before, and we knew with iPads, Android tablets, and then Microsoft started pushing into the Windows 8 space, which hasn't, I know it hasn't gone nearly as well for them as I'm sure they'd hope, but there's a real space for this. And we can make a game that not only can you jump into easily, way easier than, say, trying to get friends who've never played D&D before to play with you, it can just be fun for all these people to, like the friends who normally wouldn't play a complex tabletop or a pen and paper game, to jump in and play like they would a video game. And that was a big part of why we wanted to do this. We wanted to make that Saturday night board game experience fun and easy and accessible to more people, more of our friends. Scott?
Okay.
Yeah, and I mean, from my side, Lucas Reynolds and I, we're two of the other founders. We kind of played a lot of tabletop board games, pen and paper RPGs, growing up, and it just kind of became something that we tried to do. And the older we got, the more difficult it was to play with our friends who may not have ever played those games before. We got girlfriends and wives who wanted to be a part of our world, but really couldn't because the rule sets were too complex and it took 5 hours just to make a character. It was really frustrating for them. And so basically we started, Eon Ultra started as a pen and paper RPG. And we really just wanted to make it more accessible for the people that we like to hang out with. And that's kind of where the genesis of this idea came from, was that, you know, everybody has this technology already. You know, out of a group of five people, one person is likely to have a tablet or a PC that can play this game. And out of those five people, all of them are likely to have a handset sitting in their pocket that's capable of playing it. So it was kind of a no-brainer for us to say, let's try and use this technology to kind of reproduce that experience and make it easier for people to join.
Yeah, and like a lot of video games, we as designers, we kind of talk about easy to learn, hard to master as well, where there is the depth for people who really want to get hardcore and play all the numbers and know all the stats. They can dive deep into that level as you would most RPG video games. But for the person who isn't interested in that, it's still fun, it's still entertaining, and you can still have fun hanging out with your friends, enjoying the story and the atmosphere and the experience without feeling left out.
All right, on. Okay. So it sounds like you guys have some experience in the video game designing industry. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So my background originally started in film and television, but really quickly went to video games. So from indie film and television, I started working in AAA games somehow, designing and directing cinematics, storytelling in games. I just love storytelling, visual and otherwise. And I worked at Electronic Arts on the Need for Speed franchise for quite some time, which was a lot of fun, mostly because as a racing game telling story, we just got to play. We got to play with technology, got to play around on something that was parallel to the main game experience rather than being core to it. So it was a fun time to experiment with technology and see how far we could push, especially in the console generation shift. But after that, I got into the actual meat of real storytelling in RPG games. I was with BioWare for a few years, working on new IP, new interactive storytelling design, on a project that didn't ship after that, Mass Effect 2, where I was doing, again, interactive story and design work. And quickly after that, I was at Ubisoft doing creative direction for some of their smaller projects in Europe, then Montreal, and then suddenly 8 or 9 years had passed for me in video game business. And I was getting a little bit burnt out of out from AAA, the AAA grind. And I had traveled around from Vancouver to Edmonton, Europe, Montreal, back to Vancouver. I was getting burnt out, called up Scott, who was still in Vancouver, and said, we'd been talking for years about trying something of our own. And I came back to Vancouver, and he and Lucas, the other founder, had been scheming as well, and just the right time. So last year we said, okay, let's give it a shot. Let's try this.
All right. So, and you said, I'm sorry, Edward, you also have experience as well. I'm sorry.
That was Edward.
Yeah, so
that was Edward. Scott. Hey, Scott, you also have.
So I met Edward. I worked with Edward first at Electronic Arts, where I was working with him on cinematics, and I kind of stayed there a bit longer. I became a cinematic designer. Again, a really important part of my job is storytelling, and then working with the systems to basically take the game and be able to tell a story using the engine was kind of where my skill set evolved. Most recently, I worked for a company called United Front Games, where I did some cinematic design on Sleeping Dogs. I've also done quite a bit of board game and pen and paper design, and that's kind of where we came up with this idea and decided to kind of move forward from that.
Yeah, so the team's an interesting mix of people who have a lot of experience building large games, figuring out how to efficiently create a lot of complex, fun, interesting systems and designs, and then a group of passionate pen and paper designers who've been intersecting with games, games and AAA games, kind of all meshing together. It's one of the most unique teams I've ever been on. It's tons of fun.
So it sounds like you guys are taking the RPG aspects and really putting them into a full-on video game.
Yeah.
Kind of like they've been trying to do for a while with some sort of online social game.
Yeah, we looked early on at examples of board games that were turned into video games or like tablet games, which didn't interest us. We weren't looking at converting a board game into a video game representation. What we really ended up with is we realized we wanted to make a video game where the screen was just a shared space rather than being something in front of your face. And that the controllers were something that you interacted with and you could have something private to keep or to share. And as we got deeper and deeper in design, well, we started out with endless board game prototypes, reams of cards and stats and giant flowcharts of character abilities that we played. Every level we would design, we'd build as a board game prototype first that plays basically like a pen and paper game. It's kind of a 6-to-1 ratio. If we have 6 hours of board game, we know it'll be 1 hour of video game, roughly. But when we got into the video game design, we had to throw out so many assumptions about video game rules that we knew. For example, there's no up and down on the main screen. So learning how best to present information to characters, where story comes up, how to orient story properly to the like cinematics to the characters or players that it's relevant to, when you want something private on your own handset, when you want to share. Basically, it's a video game with 4 to 6 screens, and not everyone gets the same info at the same time. But the other really cool thing we found is you can hide things from other players, but it's all local. So whereas in an MMO, you have to curate the experience to a degree where you have to make sure players can't really be bastards to other players that much. Whereas in our game, generally, the best way to play this game is everyone's in a room together. And there's nothing we love more than laughing at friends being bastards to other friends when you're right there. They can all,
yeah.
They can all. You can try to do something about it. Like so,
we had an early playtest once where one guy he's playing our battle mage Mirren, and one of her abilities early on was a fireball, and it had this kind of area of effect splash damage. And he looked at the ability and he said, "Well, if I use this against the monster, am I going to hurt my allies?" And we said, "Yes." And he's, "Well, what stops me from doing that?" And we said, "Nothing, except maybe they're your ride home."
Right on.
And,
okay.
And so really quickly, like, everybody laughed, and we knew, like, that's the kind of experience we want to go for. It's cooperative. The characters are all working together. The players are all working together. But because you're in the same space, you can give a little bit more emergent, behavior to the players. Let them choose what they're going to do, and they hold themselves to it.
Yeah, you don't have to babysit things like you would in an MMO design. You can let the players sort out so many difficulties between them, just like you would in any board game or pen and paper, and that is something new to me in video game design that I've barely ever seen, so that's been super exciting. We can trade between players. We don't put it in like an auction holding room. If Scott desperately needs help because he's made a poor decision, not that Scott ever would. He's a very good player. He can beg me for help, and I'll say, I'll help you, but only if you give me the item that I want. And then at the end, I help him, but he doesn't give it to me. That's for me to sort out with him. The game isn't going to try to help sort that out. The game promises to resolve nothing. It's up to the players to sort out those disputes. That's been a lot of fun, okay. Those kind of designs.
We also have a feature where at the end of combat, basically all of the loot that the monsters were holding on to or the battlefield was containing, it just kind of spills out onto the ground. And we're using multi-touch, so one of the things we discovered early on was that players could basically just reach in and grab the loot. And some players kind of started hesitantly and trying to figure out what each piece was and doled it out really democratically. But the more we playtested, the more we realized people just really like to race for it, grab as much loot as they can. And you end up with a lot of hand smacking, and that's the kind of experience we love.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So it looks like the base game is $25. Is that right?
Yeah. So our Kickstarter pledge, you get the base game at $25. When we release the game publicly, hopefully to significantly more people than will come in backing us on Kickstarter, we're going to be releasing episodically. So we're going to the adventure to the Aeon Altar takes 9 episodes to get there. We want to have an adventure out every 4 to 6 weeks, and that adventure will have at least 3 play sessions in it. And when we talk about a play session, it's you sit down with your friends and you say, okay, we're in this level. There's various things we can do. Each we know it's a story, has a beginning, a middle, and an end, which will get us further along the campaign. You choose one of those. You have an idea. It'll be somewhere between, you know how long it'll be because it'll say it's 20 minutes or 40 minutes or 90 minutes. Each session is between 20 to 90 minutes. And you jump in and play. So our Kickstarter backers will get all the content that will ever be released for the campaign. And if you don't jump in on Kickstarter, you'll be able to buy those episodically as they're released as well. Price point to be determined, but it'll be equivalent to that $25 amount in some okay. division. And of course, our Kickstarter backers will get those episodes as they're released, unless you pledge for the beta level, the scout level, and you'll get a whole bunch of that way earlier. Although it's beta, so you can tell us where we screwed it up and help us fix it.
Okay.
I'm just also worth pointing out the $25 level, you get all of the, as Ed said, all of the episodic content is basically you get all of that. And normally you would only have to purchase that on the tablet. So that's the shared device that sits in the middle of the table. So the $25 level, you get all of that content. However, the player devices, each of the 5 players, we don't expect those to cost anything. So if you back to the $25 level, that's not only is that the tablet device, but all players can connect to that for free as well.
And is that the plan for the final game when everything comes out?
Yeah, absolutely. We liken it to the tablet device is like the dungeon master who buys the DMing books, and then he sets up the night, has his friends over, photocopies of the character sheets, and the character sheets are the equivalent of the handsets. So you take out your iPhone or Android or WinPhone, they all work together, and you download that app and get the update, and you can play. So we want to make it as easy for people to jump in and play as possible. That's the dream.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
We are working completely cross-platform. We have, in all of our prototype builds, we have vertical slices right now with about an hour and a half of gameplay in it, and we have Windows talking to iOS, talking to Android, and it all runs perfectly smoothly.
Excellent. And so the game will run itself. There is no actual game master, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so the one person does buy the tablet version, yep, but they don't have to run anything. It'll run itself.
Yeah, it's a video game. You play it like a pen and paper because you're all around the table, but after that, it's exactly like a video game, except you don't have a screen in front of your face.
So, let's say you guys get this going and it's all good, and all 9 adventures come out. You make more adventures. What's your plan then?
So I think once we're done all 9 adventures and we've told the story, we've gotten to the Aeon Altar, I'm going on vacation.
fair.
We'll really see how it feels. We'll say, well, first off, one of our stretch goals, our really high-end stretch goal, is a level creator toolset. Because we know if we have a good toolset out there and people love our game, they're probably going to make a lot of really cool content way faster than we could, because there's just so many people out there who who love doing that. So we can see that there could be a longevity with that. As well, we're going to sit down and say, okay, do we have more story to tell. Obviously, there's so much story after this first campaign that we want to tell. Do we do it with more campaign story with this engine as as expansions to Aeon Alter, or is it time to reassess technology, try Aeon Alter 2? Maybe everyone by that time, by beginning of 2015, once all 9 episodes are out, we're estimating around December the last episode would come out next year. Maybe everyone will be wearing Google Glass or living on the moon. We'll just see really what tech looks like and what makes sense for us.
One of the one of the things that we're excited about for Kickstarter in general, I mean, it's a community. And like we know that we're building a game that has really never been built before. As soon as you kind of get what we're trying to do, it's really quite unique. And one of the exciting things is that with Kickstarter, we get to work with a great community of people. And our goal the entire time, especially in being episodic, is it allows us to be reactive. So, you know, if people are saying, we really love this, but there's just not enough content. We can work to basically give people, you know, exactly what they want. Or if people are saying we need more level editor stuff, yeah, then we can just
it's one of the cool things. Like when we first started the project, I was terrified of the idea of episodic content coming from AAA. For me, I said, we make a game, put it in a box, and we're done. But doing it episodically, especially a game like this where people love getting involved in the content creation and telling stories, is as each episode evolves, we know what people are loving, what people are playing, when they'll tell us when we're making mistakes, and we can evolve that as we're telling the story, and just like you do on a TV show.
Okay. So it looks like you have a map of the continent of, forgive me if I pronounce this wrong, Aurelia?
You got it.
So is there plans to put out some sort of source material for this? I saw that at one of the levels there's a PDF. I think the level right above the full game also gives you a PDF with some background information, but will you be developing that more so that when you get that design engine out, the players can actually design stuff in your world?
Yeah, absolutely. That's something that I'm excited for. I mean, if we open it up and we let people make their own content, they could make mods of whatever they really felt like, but we will absolutely aim to share more about our world, more about these characters, and give people the opportunity to explore within our world itself.
The history of this project, like Scott said earlier, came from a pen and paper game that Scott, Lucas Reynolds, and another friend who's not with the team now, he's over at Microsoft actually, started inventing about 12, 13 years ago. So there's huge amounts of source material that has never been published, that when we said, let's make a video game, we just pulled a very narrow slice out of it and said, let's start with something simple. So when you see that world map, we're going to be exploring one small section of that, but speaking to a massive part of that world. And when we talk about future campaigns and future story, it'll start covering that whole world. What that looks like, I have no idea today. We want to tell this one story first and then see what happens.
Well, and that's okay, because there's so much room to expand. It looks like you guys are setting up for the potential for a lot more, and I like that.
Yeah, and there's a – so I was only tangentially involved in the IP creation over the years, so I'm constantly saying, hey, what about this idea? And then Luke and Scott will say, oh, we already invented that. We have all that covered. Here's 4 pages of wiki about it. Here's everything you ever need to know. And there's so much stuff that Luke Scott, Joey Wiggs previously have written and built into this that we can use and exploit as we get further. But right now, yeah, we're just focused on telling this one story, really figuring out how to make this kind of game, or how to finish this game. We figured out really how it works in all of our prototypes over the last year, and now we're ready to finish it.
So you are 5 days into your, 35 days or so? And you're right about 8%.
Yeah.
Just under 10.
Yeah.
So that's looking pretty good as far as I'm concerned. How do you guys feel about that?
It feels like it's going a bit slow. We've seen campaigns move faster. We've seen campaigns move slower. We're working our butts off every day just telling people about what we're doing. Whenever we talk to people, they seem so excited about what we're doing. So we're just trying to get the word out there, telling everyone we can. We know for video gamers, the next 2 weeks are pretty busy. I think there's a few, I think Microsoft and Sony might be doing something. I've heard rumors. So So
not a whole lot.
No. Doing a little something. You know, it's a busy time. So we're feeling okay, but we're just getting out there and talking about it and telling people what we're doing. We're going to be posting updates every day. I'm working really hard on a new video, basically a massive gameplay video of a lot of our demo level right now, just showing moment to moment what it's like. We played this demo at PAX East this past year and at Gen Con in various iterations. So quite a few of our early Kickstarter backers have actually played through this and know it. So it's exciting to finally actually show it out to the rest of the world.
Okay.
And so we're going to have stuff like that every day.
Let's talk about Flying Helmet as a company.
Yeah.
You guys have this. What else do you have planned for the future? Is this it for right now, or do you have those shelved projects that you'll come to as you have time?
This is the big one right now. We also have another little thing incubating that Scott and another one of our designers, Dustin Adams, has been working on, an untitled project about a robot in love.
Okay.
I'm a sucker for sci-fi, so when Scott and Dusty were pitching this, I got really excited. Scott and Dusty are actually doing a game jam this weekend for the full indie group in Vancouver, a bunch of indie game designers, so we might see some cool stuff out of there. But apart from that, we've been talking with a lot of publishers about what we can do in other spaces in the future. We're a long ways from committing to anything, but when we talk about doing a game like Aeon Altar, we can't help but think about certain types of licensed products, licensed games, mm-hmm. and other tabletop spaces. So we're chatting with some people about things like that. I have no idea what'll come of it. I can't say anything today, but future could hold interesting things. But I think first we gotta make this and really see that it'll work.
I think I also want to point out that Flying Helmet Games, when we first started, basically our mandate was we wanted to make games that brought people together again in the same space, same social space. And so as we move forward, whatever games we build, we're going to be trying to keep that mandate in mind. So if Aeon Altar, if we're able to build Aeon Altar and we're able to create it and it's successful, we're really excited to be able to kind of take that type of playing experience and open it up. People start copying us and making the same type of game, we'd actually love that because we think that this could be a really fun way to play games, and we'd just be so excited to play whatever anybody else comes up with.
Yeah, somebody asked us once, what if somebody steals your idea and starts making other games like other tabletop video games? And I thought, that's great. I want to play them. I don't have time to make them all.
Yeah.
Excellent. So, good. So in the next year, where can we see you guys at? You said you went to PAX East and to Gen Con.
Yeah.
Where else are you headed this year?
Looks like we're going to be at PAX East again, if all goes well. We may be at CES, but that's still in the works, not confirmed yet. And then we'll see see what happens later in the year. We'd love to be back at Gen Con again. It's really cool being right at that intersection of video games and tabletop board game community because it's so similar yet such different types of people that
absolutely
that you meet up with. We love PAX, but the Gen Con crowd for me coming from video game space was such a different cool crowd that you normally don't just the different kinds of people that you meet at video game conventions too. So
absolutely,
I hadn't had that kind of opportunity when I was doing like PR for the big AAA companies at E3 and places like that, and it's been super fun.
Okay, so it sounds like the game runs you about $25. That's Canadian dollars for the Americans that listen. So actually for us, it's a little cheaper.
Oh, yeah.
And then we could go all the way up to what's your high levels there? Seven, eight thousand.
So at our we have a few different milestone tiers. At 125, you get the beta, and you get previous tiers to that. That includes some cool in-game bonuses and items, a T-shirt, soundtrack, things like that. We have and then up in the somewhere around 1200 or 1500, you can be in the game. You can actually design a character, and we'll get you in the game, put your face in the game.
Okay.
Plus a whole bunch of cool rewards leading up to that, a bag of swag, art, like custom art. And then if you want to go all out, we have one called Beyond the Gate. We have one really top tier reward where you're one of our designers. So we find a feature that you're passionate about. You work with us on the design of that feature, either in person or on Skype. Or we just work with you to see what works best. And through that, you're also invited to hang out with us at our launch party, night of games with us and the team. Nearly every reward that comes before that, you'll definitely be in the game as a character. And what else? I know I'm missing a few things there.
No, that sounds about right.
Yeah. So we have a number of tiers for people who both just like cool swag, or people who want to have a whole bunch of cool in-game items, or people who actually want to get involved in game design and get to know what it's like to make a game. Can work at creating a monster, for example. One of our tiers, the Bestiary Master tier, design a monster, draw it, describe it however you want to describe it. Then you'll work with our concept artists and our modelers to make that guy work. Work with our designers to figure out what he does and what kind of animation, what kind of attacks and moves he has, and then see it in the game.
Yeah, I think this one's especially cool because when you're done, you'll get like a nice print of your character, of the monster that you've made. You probably get some nice artwork of the final rendered creature, and then being able to see the work that you've done showcased in the game as it kills you.
So even if you're an artist who can, or even if you're a guy who has a cool idea but can only do a stick figure, we'll just put you on the phone or with Skype with our artists until they figure out every single detail of what you want to see, and then show you your vision with our awesome concept artists and modelers.
Oh, good. So you're designed already for me.
Perfect.
Okay, so I think that'll do us, but you guys can find the Flying Helmet over at facebook.com/flyinghelmetgames. You can find them on Twitter at @EonAlter, and you can go to their website at www.flyinghelmetgames.com. I want to thank Edward and Scott for being on tonight from way over in Vancouver. Check out their Kickstarter. It's really interesting, and I think it's something worth getting into. So you can find them over on Kickstarter. Just search for Eon Alter. That's E O N A L T A R. And we will talk to you guys real soon.